Well, this, the day after Halloween, which is a high point for many children, including those in my house, we have All Saints Day. And All Saints Day is one of those tricky ones because, well, that's where the sermon title comes from. What makes a saint? And we all know what the capital S saint is. It's someone who has lived an exemplary life and is remembered because of that. That's sort of it. It's biggest definition. Our friends in the Catholic Church have got a process that they put people through, and if they've got sufficient merit to meet the criteria, then they are made an official saint, and we hear about some of them, and there are far more than I've ever heard of, that's for sure. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's one of the uses of the word saint, and I've come across people who want to make a big thing of it in one way or the other, and I think, well, this is the English language, notoriously slippery, and some words have got more meanings than you can possibly imagine. Saint can have at least two, and one is perhaps that, the historically noticed righteous person, and then there's that other use of the word saint, the one that is actually used in the Bible far more. Saints are, well, they're us. So what makes a saint is perhaps the larger question. And as I was thinking of this, November 1st, All Saints Day, and I wanted to think, what is it that makes a saint that is something that we can actually get a hold of and that might inform our behaviors and what we think? And the first thing, of course, is when it comes to what makes a saint, to a certain extent, it is our behavior. For those who are officially sanctioned as saints, their behavior includes things that we may or may not find easy to manage, including working miracles or miracles being worked in their name after they're dead. I'm not quite sure what I think about that, but I'm sure it'll all become clear when I can ask Jesus face to face, assuming I still care about the question. I'm sure there will be an answer that will satisfy me. And part of what makes the word saint in the biblical connection, we see it in a number of different places in Scripture. James talks about saints quite often, if nothing else. Is, of course, that we need to behave in a particular way, but we need to know why we're behaving in a particular way. And it all begins, what makes us a saint is found in our reading in Hebrews, is where we see it first of all. And we have to look for it a little bit. I mean, it's not hidden particularly, but when we look at what's written in Hebrews in 9, verse 11 to 14, what we're seeing is a new way of being connected with God. And what the writer of Hebrews is reminding us is that for a long time, the way to God was through the sacrifice of animals. And whatever we think about the Old Testament, and whatever we think about the sacrificial system, that was the way it was. And that's the way God chose to interact with his people for a long time. But with the coming of Jesus, something changed. And what we see, and what the writer of Hebrews is at great pains to point out, is that there was a dramatic shift in how these things worked. And before Jesus, you needed to make repeated sacrifices that you might be in a right relationship with God. You might be holy as a human being can be. And there was blood involved and ashes of heifers and things like that that we find a little odd, of course. But what the writer of Hebrews is saying, that's the way it used to be. The way it is now is we don't do that over and over again, not because we have fundamentally changed and that with the coming of Jesus, human nature changed forever. But with the coming of Jesus came a perfect sacrifice, the first perfect sacrifice ever, perfect to the point where it only had to be done once. Before that, you needed to bring a sacrifice in one way or another, and there's a wide range of things happening in the sacrificial system. Sometimes the high priest brought one on behalf of all the people. Sometimes you brought your own on behalf of yourself. And through that action, you were then made holy. You would be moved into that the best relationship with God you could have. Until something went wrong, you touched a dead body, you were around the wrong kind of person, you did the wrong thing. Or something happened, often completely beyond your control, and then you were out of that relationship again, and you had to do it again. You had to come with another sacrifice. writer of Hebrews says when Jesus came, all that ended, not because we became fundamentally holy, but because the essence of holiness, Jesus Christ himself, came, offered himself as a sacrifice. And from that moment on, when we moved into that relationship, the one sacrifice was good enough for all and for all time. And so, in one sense, what makes a saint is that Jesus came and died. And then those of us who are in that relationship with God through Jesus are now a saint. Because what a saint is, in its essence, is someone in that relationship. We see in hymns quite often references to saints who have gone before. We sometimes, in Scripture, we see hints of this, and in other places we read people talking about the saints before Jesus even. And they were saints because they had that relationship with God. But they had to go through so much more work to maintain it. And in our case, the work was done once. So the first thing that makes us that saint is that ongoing relationship with God, our ability to be in immediate and even intimate relationship with a holy God without needing sacrifices over and over again. And then it's obeying the commandments is the next thing. But perhaps not the ones you might think about immediately. Over and over again, Jesus talks about what it means to be a follower of him. And Jesus never says in a sort of an explicit kind of way that the Old Testament is pointless. Some people will try to make that point, that with the loss of the sacrificial system, everything in the Old Testament is just either looking forward to Jesus, or it's just historically interesting, and that's about it. And then we come to our reading in Mark, where if that was the case, when one of the teachers of the law heard them debating and noticed that Jesus had given a good answer, if what I just suggested was true, when this teacher of the law asked Jesus of all the commandments, which is the most important, then Jesus would have said, they're unimportant. There's nothing important there at all. I'm here. This is all that matters from this point on. Well, he didn't say that at all. And there's some really interesting things going on in this. Because he says the most important one is the Shema. Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God is, well, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind and strength. And the second is this, love your neighbor as yourself. There's no commandment greater than these. And there's some really interesting things going on in there that I find. And if nothing else, the first thing that I noticed is that Jesus refused to fall into the trap of what is, because you notice, he's asked, what is the greatest command? And he said, well, it's these two. Because there is no one greatest command. That's not the way it works. You can't play these two off against each other. If you want the greatest, it's two of them. Which for lots of us is hard to do. And it was hard for me to do until I had twins. What's your favorite kid? Them. You know, and then when you have another one. And that's what every parent does with their children. You know, which is your favorite? Even if you have one, the answer is always all of them. With twins, it's thrown into high relief because they're there at the same age. You can't say, well, you know, I'd like the older one for this and the younger one for that. When the difference is 17 minutes, it's not really that significant. Jesus refuses to play this game and says that, no, it's not that there is one greatest. These are the things that everything holds together on. Love the Lord your God with yourself. Love your neighbor as yourself. That's how it all works. And if we're going to be a saint, if we're going to be part of this great collection of saints, the communion of saints, as it's often called, these are the things that we need to remember. That if being a saint is one who has achieved a certain level of holiness, if you will, to use the Old Testament thinking, then that's taken care of by Jesus coming, giving himself as the perfect sacrifice, as our writer in Hebrews said. And then it comes down to, what is it that we need to do? What are the commandments? What are our actions need to look like? And Jesus says, here it is. You do these two things and you're fine. These are the greatest commandments because you can't do any of the other ones without keeping these two. And if you keep these two, you'll probably keep the other ones without even trying. I remember when I was younger in Sunday school, every once in a while, and that sort of that kind of thing, every once in a while you'd have a Sunday school teacher playing sort of the gotcha game to help you remember things. You know, that you know any saints? And when you're young and you hang around with some Catholic people, you say, well, of course not, because saints are dead. I don't know any dead people who are saints or anything. Oh, no, we're all saints. Okay, well, we are all saints, and it obviously stuck with me because I still remember it this many years later. But I wish I would have got a little more instruction going on from that point to say that, yes, we are all saints, but this is why. What makes us a saint is our behavior, but not that our behavior is so much more exemplary than everyone around us. But the behavior that makes us a saint is that behavior that says, yes, I want a relationship with God through Jesus. And our general day-to-day behavior that makes us a saint is that which springs from this ongoing awareness that the Lord, our God, is one, and that we treat our neighbors as ourselves. It actually gets pretty easy then, doesn't it? I mean, it's simple, but it's not easy. Maybe that would be a better way to put it. That when we want to be a saint, when we want to be added to that group or that category that James talks about and that is referenced all through Scripture, and I'm not talking about trying to become like Saint Benedict or Saint Francis or something like that, although there's nothing wrong with you know, aspiring to that. But I'm thinking more about when Paul writes letters to all the saints in a particular place, and we think, I'd like to be one of those. That if Paul wrote a letter to Briarcrest, to all the saints in Briarcrest, I would like to be considered one of those. Well, I don't have to raise somebody from the dead. I don't even have to go and live a life of radical poverty like St. Francis did, where I give up everything I've got, and if that's not enough, then I go and live with the literal outcasts of society, as Francis did when he went and lived with the lepers. Scripture doesn't tell us that that's the only way to that kind of life. For some people, that is their call, and we remember them as special people. But they're no more saints than we are. Because the saints that Paul and James, Peter, Jesus, if you would have used that word, the saints that are being addressed there are those who know that Christ's sacrifice was sufficient once for all for everyone. That we don't have to keep doing more things to make us acceptable to God. That when Christ came, lived here, suffered, died, and rose again, that requirement was taken care of. And all we have to do is accept it. And then when we want to think about how do I live my life today, we keep these two things in mind. The Lord our God is one, and we love the Lord our God with all our heart, with our soul and our mind and our strength, and we love our neighbor as ourselves. Because the Christian life, the life of a saint, isn't just what we think and believe. And it isn't just what we do either. To paraphrase our story in Mark, what's the one thing you need to do to live the life of a saint, to live a Christian life? Well, the one thing you need to do is love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. And if that doesn't sound like one, it doesn't matter, because you can't separate the two. The life that we want to live, the life that we meet together on Sundays to celebrate and remind ourselves that we're in, is one that is characterized by the right belief and then the right behavior. Knowing that with sainthood, unfortunately, does not come perfection, that we will continue to make mistakes, which is why I'm grateful that we have a time of confession every Sunday. As I often say, we come to confess, not because we're especially awful, but because we're just human. And it's a good reminder that when we say that prayer of confession together, whether the particular phrases ring true with us and our current experience or not. We're saying them together because we are all in this together. And we're all doing our very best to live out a life characterized by our belief that Christ's sacrifice was sufficient once for all, and we are in that relationship with God through Him, and that our actions are characterized by loving God and loving our neighbor. That's what makes a saint. And that's what we're doing. And on this All Saints Day, what we're celebrating is people who live that kind of life too. Some of them in such dramatic ways that there seemed to be something special about them, that we remember them hundreds and hundreds of years later. But when you think of saints, I would be willing to bet that each of you thinks of a person that maybe I've never even heard of. That Sunday school teacher, that bus driver, that neighbor, that person you knew, a relative perhaps, you just thought, there's somebody. Whatever they have, that's what makes a saint. And I'm pretty sure that when we looked into their lives a little bit more, we'd find someone who loved God with all their heart, strength, and soul, and loved their neighbor as themselves. What makes a saint is wanting to be as much those two things as we possibly can. The good news is that, well, that we can, and that we do. So All Saints Day isn't just for people in the past, and it's not just for people that you read about in books. All Saints Day is even for us.